Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. I've got to get straight to business because we've got the interview with Aaron Williams Lee from our First Right organization, and we're going to give you that information. As a matter of fact, if you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org website, right there on the important links as well as the podcast page, you will find the links and email necessary to contact and get involved with our First Right organization. So with that, let me just quickly move forward because I've got a lot of stuff to cover. The number to call in, but because I've got a lot of stuff to cover and because I have an interview, We just don't have room for phone calls today. So you're more than welcome to call in tomorrow. You know, you got to call in early because if not, you may not get in at all. So with that, the number to call in, though, just to go through the process, 215-867-8255 or 215-TOP-TALK. And as you know, CPAC has been going on and what you will not hear at CPAC, what you will not hear from CPAC is a tangible solution to getting the federal government into compliance. Almost everything that they clamor and complain about, really the root of it is unconstitutional government. Why is it that they're not necessarily on board with this? Because there's more money in keeping the problem alive, letting the beast thrive, because people are willing to pay all sorts of obscene amounts of dollars in keeping this thing going, because there's lots of people that have got their hands in your pocket. I'm not one that's asking for your hand in your pocket to keep it there. What I'm asking is for you to get involved and actually be a contributor one way or the other. But this is the means to killing the beast and not a perpetual cycle, not something that is going to take, you know, a lifetime in doing. We don't have a lifetime. As a matter of fact, not getting on board soon and not getting on board enough people fast enough, then I'm going to just be the pragmatic one and pull the plug and just start filling sandbags and doing what's best for me and my family, because I'll be at that point where I don't think we have enough time. We still have time. It's just a matter of, and if you look at what we're asking for, we're only asking to cover the travel expenses at this point in time. That's all I'm asking for. Let me get out to have these conversations. I'm not asking for any compensation other than just helping me cover the travel costs. And so we'll get into that in just a second. But other than the fact that you're not hearing a solution from CPAC, I'm hoping to give you more evidence and more information regarding the militia today. But with all the things that are out there that have to be reported, we'll see if we get there or not. So leaping forward, the obligatory groveling, we do need your help. We have a GoFundMe. Go look at how much money's been contributed and go look and find out how much money we need just to cover the last trip. Because again, I'm not looking to line my pocket. None of this is making me rich. It's only reimbursing me for all of my expenditures on travel. Zero compensation for time, zero compensation for me at all. It is not about money. But if you don't have money and you still want to get involved, then all you've got to do is just contact us and we'll get you started. I know that there's lots of people. I've recently been contacted. Somebody has told me, hey, I want you to know I'm doing these great things for you. And that's awesome. That's far better than somebody calling me, actually reaching out to me, because it's happened before. I've had people reach out to me and say, hey, I want to help you. And then when I could say, okay, I need to do this, this, and this, and we go, well, I'm really good at writing editorials for the local newspaper. So, that's what I'm going to do. How's that? And I mean, none of it's helped me. And so I go, great. That's a great thing you're doing. Keep it up. Thank you so much. And obviously there's no return on investment of my time on that effort. But anyway, the whole point is that I do appreciate people reaching out and letting me know at least what they're doing. Because then I know somebody over in some middle state is, you know, going, hey, I'm writing editorials and calling out the newspaper for being bad. And okay, but that has nothing to do with getting the education out to those people that need it, which are our state legislators. That's why we're focused on them. And so we've got to get the state legislators to wake up. With that, there are other forms of organizations that are out there that I want you to really think about and look at into helping. One of those, you know, is the constitutionclub.ning.com. Get involved with those folks. They're working to repeal the 17th Amendment. This is one way to surely drain the swamp. I mean, truly and totally drain the swamp on the Senate side, because if we get the Senate back into being appointed instead of being elected by Soros and all the money that is poured into the Senate, we'll actually have the state legislatures who change from one year to the next dramatically to bring in a good senator to represent the state's interests. That's what they're supposed to do. That is their role per the Constitution. And the Senate has been neglecting their role per the Constitution since they allowed direct election. And that's why the states are in the problems that they're in. Bottom line, the 17th Amendment really didn't make that dramatic of a change. It didn't change what the Senate is supposed to do and the roles and responsibilities, but it did change who is responsible and who they're accountable to. And actually, it didn't change who they're accountable to, but it does change who they listen to, because they're only listening to those globalists who are helping buy their seat. That is why the Senate is the most valuable position in our government. There are billions of dollars going into the Senate on an annual basis if you look at how much money goes into the Senate races every 2 years. Anyway, as I always do, I did look at the news and I did look at, you know, if there's any possibility. There is none. They're not going to put aside any of their unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers. And they being the federal government, that means we're going to have to do it. We're going to have to move forward. And so you could tell I'm really trying to rush through this. I am so proud of President Trump not bringing home a bad deal that so many of his predecessors have done just because he feels obligated. He went out there and had this meeting. Walking away is the most important thing, and it sends a message to Xi or China and the rest of the bad players in the world. We're not here to be subjugated anymore. If you're not going to give me a deal that actually benefits individual liberty and individual sovereignty, which we're trying to help benefit you on those same principles, then we're out of here. Some, like Obama, were deliberate sellouts in the deals that they made, and why he, Obama himself, ought to be impeached. Yes, you can impeach former presidents today. You got to understand that when the Constitution was written, when a former president stepped down, that was it. He had no more role. As a matter of fact, he couldn't even tour. He couldn't even be, a keynote speaker. He was literally back to a civilian person, and they had laws that kept the federal government was the only vocal voice, and you were no longer a part of the federal government. But when they started creating retirements, when they started creating these emoluments for president by giving them lifetime because I'm in a rush, I have these problems. In other words, they have the security details that is assigned to them. They have all sorts of benefits. They come in, they get briefed all the time on what's going on, and they have their finger in the pot. And as a matter of fact, because they're receiving a salary, because they're receiving a retirement, they can be impeached, and that salary can be, or I should say retirement salary, be stripped from them for their behavior. And so clearly, Obama has violated the ethics and the expectations of a former president. He should be impeached. We need to start going down this path, impeaching Clinton's because she's also probably receiving a state salary as well. Anybody that is out there not supporting the Constitution and supporting the enemy of the Constitution and trying to pervert it, subvert it, overrun it, undermine it, whatever you want to say. Though all these people need to be impeached. And so let's start with the last one, and we can go through the Bushes. Well, one's gone now. But we need to go through all of them, even Jimmy Carter. I do love what Nikki Haley said. And the one thing that she didn't say right on only giving foreign aid to our friends. More importantly, we should only be giving aid to those who are fellow champions of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. There are way too many people that work over America and act like friends, but they do not align with our principles, period. So the only people that should be getting aid and any assistance from the United States government and from you taxpayers are those who are champions for individual liberty and individual sovereignty and basically align with our principles, period. And we will be back with Aaron Williams Lee and a great interview. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so we have, I want to make sure I get this right, it's Aaron Williams Lee.
That's correct.
And we have Erin with us, and she is the National Director for Our First Right. So, Erin, why don't you go ahead and tell the good people what Our First Right is, what you're doing, and this whole thing that you guys are working on.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Our First Right is a national coalition initiative. We're working to bring people of different backgrounds and organizations together to work on one thing for the people, and that's completing the ratification of the original First Amendment. And that speaks to our true and equal representation we should have in our federal representation in our legislature.
Okay, so what is the problem with our current representation? Now, so and give the folks a little background. When was this amendment written?
This amendment originally was written with the Constitution and the original Bill of Rights. It was part of our original Bill of Rights. In fact, it was one of the 12 original Bill of Rights.
Right.
And a lot of people know at this point, you know, that we had the original 10 that were ratified. What they don't know is that we had the number one and number two. Number two was ratified in 1992 by a gentleman named of Greg Watson. And the first one, though, does speak about the representation we're supposed to have in this country. And in the Constitution, you'll read that it speaks about representation of having one per 30,000 people. Well, you know, 220, 230 some years ago, you know, George Washington rose and he spoke to the entire assembly at the Philadelphia Convention. And he said that, you know, he felt very strongly about one thing. And they wanted to change the wording of the last minute. You know, they made a motion to change that wording, and they wanted that to stipulate that rather than 30,000 people per district, they wanted to make it 50,000 people. So our representation, according to our original First Amendment, should read where we have, you know, instead of one per 30,000, we need to have one representative representing 50,000 people in our country. Currently, we have a representation of anywhere between 1 and 750 to almost 900,000 people or more. And, you know, with a district that large, how do you know what kind of representation you're getting? You have, you know, someone you can't reach. They're in an office. You have no idea where they are. And if you can get to that office and get through their staff members, you're lucky. And then they have that office in D.C., that very opulent office in D.C. Never get into that office. These representatives are at such a high level. And it's disturbing to realize that we don't have the kind of representation we should have. These are people who work for us. These are our elected servants. And we don't even have the representation nor the access to get to these individuals to help, you know, steer our country. So these people are out of touch from us and we're out of touch from them. They have no idea what's going on here. And we've failed in a big way to stay on top of something like that. So when it was brought forward, this original amendment was still in ratification process. It was ratified by 11 states originally, and it only needed to be completed by two more states. And it didn't go through for some reason. It fell through or fell short with Connecticut when they decided not to complete the ratification of it. So it didn't go through completely at that time, but it does still sit in open convention.
Right. So let me, I'm just going to interject because certainly, so the people can understand this. There is no sunset to this amendment, which means that it sits out there and it can still be ratified, and that's what you were trying to do. So continue. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, yes, and that is what we're trying to do at this point. We realize that, you know, just like what Greg Watson did in 1992 with the original Second Amendment, which is now our 27th, we can still do that with our original First Amendment.
Right.
This would solve a lot of the issues we've had with voting, with the past elections, even with the Electoral College.
Okay.
My apologies for the background.
That's okay.
So this is something that we're very passionate about because we know it benefits everyone, all of the people. And the beauty about this is that it is for all of the people. This belongs to all of us, and so all of us are working on this. I may be the national director, but I'm really just kind of a voice because I have such a good group of people working behind me doing all the work. They're contacting their state representatives. They're working in their state legislatures to get this ratification pushed forward. Hmm. And that's the beauty about this, is that this is really a state's vote. Because right, it's already been passed by Congress, you know, the House and the Senate, it goes back to the states themselves for an up and down vote, basically, in each state.
Right. And so just to add to this, if you understand, folks, that there are currently 435 legislators, or I should say representatives that represent the people in Congress, this would dramatically change that to what do you estimate the numbers to be now, Aaron?
Anywhere between 6,400 and 6,500 representatives.
Okay.
And Yes, that is a large number. And that usually gets a lot of people upset. They have, you know, worries about larger government. And what we try to explain to them is that it's not necessarily larger government as much as it is diluting the power of government.
Right, right. And to clarify so that people kind of understand this, most people recognize that when they have one representative that represents a half a million to almost a million, then how is it that they will know if you need something from your representative, if your child is serving in the military and has a problem and you need to get a hold of your representative, how is it that they're going to really represent you? And so that's why they really put a cap on it from 30 and then they went to 50. And they said, no more. I mean, how can somebody truly represent their people of greater than 50,000 and at this magnitude, almost a million again? So anyway, where are you at as far as working in states and so forth? Have you got any states to pull the trigger?
We do have 4 states that are working on it currently. We have 1 state. I hesitate to name the state at this time because we are working very closely with those state representatives, and we hope to, you know, have them on board with us and working to get this motion put through. And I put that wrong because it's really not a motion. It's really kind of a resolution.
Right.
Or even a point of privilege for the people because, as I said, this sits in open convention and it only requires an up and down vote. It doesn't even have to go through committees because it's basically just a vote that the people want to bring forward. And really what that is the people themselves saying, we recognize that this is here, we want this representation, and we are asking you to please vote for this. And so it's the people themselves can really do this. We've asked folks to write letters to those state representatives that have agreed. And as soon as we have some firm names and the actual, you know, legislation or the actual verbiage all put together and the commitment from these representatives, we will share that information with everybody because we'd like to encourage them and encourage everyone to encourage them as well.
Right.
So
one of the things that I know people, there's a lot of people that have heard the mantra, drain the swamp. And actually, in this effort, this would take one house of Congress, and it wouldn't drain the swamp per se, but it would completely displace the swamp. Because if you can understand, 6,000 or more representatives can't sit in Congress. So where are they going to go?
That's a good question. We work very closely with a sister organization of ours and also one of our coalition members, Tactical Civics. And Tactical Civics has their 19-point plan. The first thing that they'd like to bring through in legislation when we have all these representatives is the Bring Congress Home Act. And the beauty about this is that all of these representatives will come back and work from their home districts with a small staff, half their salary, very little benefits. They wouldn't have to worry about a big office in D.C., and in fact, they wouldn't need to even gather in D.C. Obviously, we know there's not a huge enough space for something, you know, for that many people.
Right.
But they can all telecommute. We have the technology today. If we can be doing this today, Skyping and talking here today, why can't our legislators be doing the same thing, commuting and telecommuting that way to get our work done? They would be in their districts. We would be able to reach out and talk to them and touch them. They'd be part of the community. They'd actually have a pulse in the community. They'd know what's going on.
Right.
And what we've discovered too is in many cases, a lot of the current representatives probably won't enjoy positions like that because they're going to be out of touch from the big money corporations and the influences and special interest groups. They're always trying to influence them and write the legislation for them, rather than our legislators actually writing the real legislation. So this way, the people themselves are back in that place of power again. We can tell them, this is what we want done, how we want it done. And they'll be living amongst us. You know, they'll know our woes and our joys. So that also leads to, you know, more people picking up and taking responsibility, doing a civic job, a civic duty, running for, you know, a local office or even a representative's position, because that's part of our civic duty as, you know, Americans here in this country.
Right, right. Well, so I've actually been on record to say that I believe our legislators deserve a decent salary, but they don't deserve are the level of benefits that put them into above us. In other words, I don't believe that they should be exempt from Obamacare. I don't believe that they should be exempt from anything that they force upon us. But I do believe that if you are, you know, out there doing the heavy lifting of legislation and those types of things, just like I don't believe our state legislators are actually compensated fairly. I think that the benefits should go away. They should have the same kind of problems, and or I should say they should have the same issues as the rest of us. But Aaron, as you can tell, we're at a hard break, so please stay tuned, folks, and Aaron will be right back so that you can give us some more information regarding our first right. So folks, please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this message. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. As I was just saying, I do know that the compensation is, you know, there's lots of people that think that it, you know, ought to be a noble position, a noble job, you do it for free. I'm not necessarily a fan for that. I believe that when people aren't getting compensated appropriately, then they tend to be more open to corruption. And so I would much rather see less corruption and more honesty and so forth. So I'll leave that to the people because I'm not the king. I just, you know, that's my two cents on it. I know that there's lots of people, though, that do feel that, you know, Congress ought to, you know, just like our legislators, they ought to be doing that stuff for free. It's a position of nobility. But anyway.
Well, I would beg to differ, because I am kind of a constitutionalist myself, and it does state in our Constitution that our representatives should be adequately, compensated for the work they do. So I feel that they should be compensated, but at this stage, it appears that they have received the lion's share of compensation. So, yeah, maybe we ought to retard some of that at this point. Yes.
Well, so one of the things I know is because our congressperson that represents my district is a millionaire. And the only reason they're a millionaire is because of the way they're able to get money funneled to them through the lobbyists and so forth. And that those things have to be closed down. And we have to have tight control because that is corruption. So anyway, let me get back to the states that you're working with. So what, I know you don't want to jinx anything, but can you talk about the states that you are working with? And do you want to talk about states that you really need some help? Because who knows, some of the listeners may be able to say, you know, I want to see this happen and get involved in their states.
Oh, absolutely. We have folks in Oklahoma, South Dakota, Texas, and Alaska, and they've been working with their state representatives now. We've had some success in Oklahoma, and thanks to, you know, some really wonderful people who have stepped forward and helped provide us with some wonderful Our First Right video presentations that I would encourage everybody to check out if they can. And if I can at this time, I'd like to plug ourfirstright.org. And if you'd like to contact us and learn more information or have some questions about what we're doing, you can reach me at info@ourfirstright.org. And I will certainly return that information or return your email right away. And I wanted everybody to know that the people that are working in Texas, Oklahoma, South Dakota, and Alaska could use some help. The easiest and fastest way you can do that is contact your Secretary of State, find out who your state representatives are. Ask them for a list. They can give you a written list. They'll mail it to you. You'll have that information, and we can help connect you with the state coordinators in those states who are already connecting with representatives. And they can tell you who are the people that they've reached out to that are willing to listen, and you can write letters to those individuals. And we're trying not to inundate each state and those representatives in the states with too many letters, because we don't want them to think that this is some sort of letter writing campaign to push some big huge issue. What it is we're trying to get their attention and let them know we're out here, we speak for this. This is something we want. And it may be, you know, kind of a slow growth, but we've been moving pretty quickly since we first organized in October. And we currently enjoy 131 members who are active members, I like to say, because they're not the kind of folks sitting around talking and moaning and groaning about it. They're spreading the word. They're going out in their community. They're talking to people, and they're talking to their representatives about what we're trying to do. So I'd like to say that, you know, Our First Right is really the only action organization that we've come across that is really doing something. We're not just talking about it. We're not just spreading the word. We're actually getting out there, boots on the ground, and doing the work and talking to these people and saying, this is something we want. We hope to be working on some kind of signature list that we can put together in each state for citizens to sign. And it's not a petition, because we don't need to petition our representatives for something that we should have, that belongs to us. So what we'll be doing is we'll be hopefully passing around signature pages for people to sign saying, this is a ratification vote we want done.
So there's
go ahead.
So there's always the carrot and stick mentality of motivation, right?
Correct.
And I understand that. A tsunami of emails and letters would be more of a stick. But it seems to me like for state legislators, those who want, I mean, if you can understand that this would actually make more representatives from that state into Congress than probably what they currently have in some of the states currently, their own representatives. Is that not correct?
That's correct. Actually, if the state representatives looked at the big picture, they would realize that this would enable them to, you know, become legislators themselves, to become, right, you know, state federal legislators. And because it's not going to cost nearly as much money to run a campaign, hopefully at this point, you know, when we have that many seats available, you know, folks won't need to spend nearly as much money. And part of the carrot on that, too, also is a lot of these representatives like to have their names, you know, on legislation like this, saying that they brought this forward in their state. It's kind of a pin in their hat to say, you know, I was part of this, that this got done, and it was done for the people, and it was for the greater good.
Right, right. So the old hero mentality. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of appealing to that hero mentality, because we are dealing with people with granite dome syndrome. You know, they get into those big buildings and that's all they see is the opulence and all the money and all that. And they, you know, so this is a way to appeal to them, to let them see that, hey, you know, you can sort of be a hero for the people, actually.
Right. And so I'm just trying to impress upon the listeners that one way you can really, you know, help stimulate this. And again, this is a huge displacement of the swamp. And one way you can really help stimulate your state legislators in ratifying this is making them realize that they could all just instantly roll over, or I should say, you know, wake up in the next election and become those representatives filling those seats.
Correct. And also our federal representatives will also realize that they can be replaced. And, you know, the people are here. We can replace you because we mandate it. We want it. And the most powerful thing we can do is to actually get out there and understand, you know, what we're voting for and then really vote.
Right.
So, I mean, that's one of our most powerful tools we have at this time. But also doing something like this. This is a tool of the people. This is something we have that we can do.
Right.
And it's in our hands to do this. This is not something we can ask anybody else to do. We can't ask our representatives to do this. This is something that only we can do.
So let me ask you this. How would the congressional districts then be redrawn? Would that go back to the states to basically remap these? And one of the things that dawns on me is that a representative could easily be lose their seat if the majority of their support doesn't come from their local home community that they're getting paid for, if you understand what I'm saying, by a population center, and they happen to live, you know, out in a rural area where those people would not be voting for them. So anyway.
Yes. A lot of these individuals could be displaced. But it also will allow the average citizen themselves to step into that position. You know, we're going to see more people in the rural communities being able to step up and run for these offices, being able to represent the people in their areas, you know, and do something they really care about. Our representatives were never meant to be full-time jobs in the first place. So, you know, we're here to say we want to bring them back into their districts, doing the job they're supposed to be doing, and they can do that part-time. It's not a full-time job. And, you know, like you were saying earlier, it does displace them from the big money. It makes it more difficult for the larger special interest groups to get to these representatives. They have to spend more money themselves. And they're not all concentrated in Washington, D.C., where they're easily manhandled and wrangled into whatever special interest and corporations want them to do.
Right. And we got about a minute and a half left. And so I would probably venture to say that it would be up to each state to where those representatives would be sitting, whether they sit at the state capitol or at the county seats or what?
Yes, we propose, you know, with the Bring Congress Home Act on with Tactical Civics, that they would be brought back to their districts, to their actual voting districts. So they'd have to have an office and work and live in that district.
Which would make sense to me if they would just go then to their county seat, and that way they're still sitting amongst government friends, but they're, you know, they have a seat that everybody knows where they are and go to, instead of putting more overhead on them or having to build all these different buildings. We could just utilize the same buildings and so forth anyway.
Correct. Yes. And you know, county seats make more sense as far as, you know, districting out. But we have to remember that there are many rural areas where we're going to have, you know, a population of 20,000 or less in a county. So
right.
Some counties may be, you know, put together. And that's where Tactical Civics what they're proposing comes in. So that comes in kind of down the road. They have a redistricting plan that they have put together.
Well, let me thank you for coming on. Folks, we've got 15 seconds. So let me just tell you that if you go to the Reclaiming the Republic redstatetalkradio.org, Red State Talk Radio podcast page. All of the information will be there, her email and all of the contact information. Thank you again for coming on, and we've got a hard break, so I sorry for the lack of time, but we'll definitely have you back on, Erin, so that we can actually get some statuses and updates, okay?
Great. I'd like to dive into some more things.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And folks, we will be right back after a couple of promos. Thank you so much.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And so I hope you enjoyed the break, or actually not the break, the interview. I was madly rushing through the break to come up with a few things because, first off, I need to apologize to Erin. We have a hard schedule, and so when the music comes in, it cuts off whoever is out there, and I don't have any other way of accommodating to, you know, save rounds or anything like that. And so my apologies, Erin. I definitely want to have you back on, and I hope, because I'm hoping she's listening, and I hope that the good folks at Our First Right is listening as well. That I hope to get statuses and updates as well as more sides to this conversation as we move forward. And so to be very clear, and I'm not plugging my book, but all of these things I wrote about in my first book back in 2012. Technology was non-existent. Being a systems engineer, it became very painfully obvious as we were being dragged into, and as a matter of fact, being in the military, as you could see how the military with technology became more and more controlled by bureaucrats and lawyers that were sitting in the beltway. Because why? They were capable of technology and giving, you know, the absolute up-to-date information, and they became drunk with technology. The military, the politicians, the bureaucrats, lawyers, they became drunk with this technology and wanted more and more control. Instead of the old days where they delegated the mission out to the commanders executed, and there was a break. There wasn't this constant engagement. I mean, pretty soon we actually ended up getting to a point where the president pulls the trigger. Should then, if there was a war crime, should the president be accountable? I think that there's in some things like the military, I think there's a need for some level of separation, that the bureaucrats, politicians, and so forth have to have some type of buffer between those who they delegate their authority. If not, then there is no such as a leadership chain, because in a leadership chain, you are delegating the authority and power to somebody else, and they make the decisions. If you're the only one that can make the decisions, then I think that bodes, you know, just poorly for what leadership can do. And I think any good leader recognizes that what we've done to the military is just shameful. But to be clear, our representatives are not necessarily leaders. They'd like to consider themselves as leaders, and leaders in what we would call the trial basis of being able to, inspire and aspire to higher positions. But to be clear, there's no doubt that had the framers had this technology, they would have deployed it, because they understood how difficult it was for everybody around this nation. It took weeks for Jefferson to get on his horse and literally ride out to Kentucky to do the Kentucky resolutions. That was a huge effort on his part, just riding out there. And fortunately, he was still a kind of young man before he, you know, became president and all of those other rigors that age starts to put on a person. Madison rode to the Virginias, not as far, but Madison didn't have the same constitution health-wise as Jefferson did. And so I just think it's really important to keep that perspective, right? And if you understand what this does is by bringing these representatives closer to home, it moves them away from lobbyists, where today lobbyists only have to walk down the halls of Congress to have access to your representative, where you have to call and beg because of security and everything else to just get to see your legislator. They have full privileges and access to your representative, where you don't have that same privilege. Moving representatives home, as I talk about, would literally move these folks more accessible to you. And what even better, it makes it hard in getting access, these lobbyists, in getting access to them as well. Because now all of a sudden, these lobbyists are going to have to compete for their time with you, because now you have direct access. You don't have to go through Capitol Security and all that other crap. These are your representatives, not the lobbyist representatives, and you have to understand that. And so, you know, there's lots of people. As a matter of fact, this whole concept of this telecommuting that I put in my book, it really came from a good friend, and he was an employee that I worked with, He worked for me. Technically, I worked for him, but his name was Roger Glenn. And, you know, he was the one that first threw that out there. And I go, absolutely. That only makes sense. We need to get our representatives telecommuting. I can understand the Senate. I can understand the need for, having them in there representing the states in government, because they're constantly appointing and doing things. But there's ways to ensure that we have some form of, I'll just call it, representation for the people, you know, and get these representatives out of actually calling professional baseball players in and asking them about steroid use and so forth, and getting them to focus on, you know, whether they're going to be, you know, voting for war or what they're calling for, you know, in the things that they have constitutional responsibilities for. Now, on a trivial note, I want to share with you that today in history was the airing or the ending of the airing of the MASH program, and it's polluting America's minds and America's airwaves. I know there were lots of people that were my age, my generation. Even I was drinking the Kool-Aid from this progressive television show. But at the end of this show, this was kind of the turning of the page in America, where we finally got to a point where, okay, it's no longer cool, and it's obviously arrogance that was coming from this show in actually insulting our military and insulting America. You could tell that these guys that were a part of this show, Alan Arkin and the rest of them, were definitely hardcore. Actually, one gentleman who ended up becoming a commentary on Fox Business News, his name was Trapper John. I don't know what his real name was. I forget, but because I'm bad with names, I could probably look it up real quick and say, yeah, that's right, that's his name. Anyway, the whole point is that he was the only real conservative that was a part of the show. Most all of these folks on this show were bleeding heart liberals, and you could tell that they are ensconced with the concepts and ideas of socialism, and that we need to be controlled by government. That's the best way to go, and that's the only way to go to keep us away from them. And it's the elitist mentality that these folks have, just like our politicians. Keep me away from my constituents, from those people who are voting for me. And we've got to end that. We have to end that. And by doing so, we'll actually create a more honest dialogue and true representation, because we're going to find out who these people are that have these elitist mentalities. I mean, it's obvious. Those folks that elected Oso the communist want an elitist because they don't believe they can do better. And that's too bad. But I believe that most of America knows that they can do better, and that they can get a representative to truly represent them. And if you understand the concept of our first right, what this does is it changes the representation down to, I believe, 50,000. So in other words, one representative isn't representing a million. One representative is representing 50,000. That's why it balloons the state, or the House of Representatives will balloon into 6,000, almost 7,000 representatives. Now, I'm telling you right now that there are 7,383 state legislators across the United States. So who's going to fill these seats? The state legislators should want to actually get on board. I've made this comment before, and I'm going to tell you again. Every state that recognizes that this amendment is out there and they have an opportunity to become the next one to step up and represent those folks that they're already representing at the national level, and not at this grandioso scale, like Wyoming. They have Liz Cheney representing them, all of Wyoming. Well, they would get 10, maybe 11 representatives. And I'm telling you, they would be far better represented than having just Liz Cheney representing all of them. I'm sorry, she just can't do it all. She may be great and they may love her, but there's far better folks. And that means that people in the state legislature will see the opportunity, and because of their name recognition or what have you, and seize the moment. Carpe diem, seize the day. And so I'm hoping this organization's success, because it does have an impact. We need to actually start taking political reform. And with that, I want to point out that the House on Wednesday held a first majority vote on gun control legislation in years, bringing to the floor two bills aimed at what they call strengthening the background check system. They completely miss what we need. We need a better background check on lawmakers, because I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to get into this tomorrow, lawmakers kill far more people than any gun buyers. And if you add all the gun violence together, they do far worse damage. We will be back. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and I need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.